Morning, Your Honors.
Charlie Tebbit for Appellant Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides. Your Honors, I'd like to talk about two particular issues this morning. The first one is the application of the Open Government Act of 2007, amendments to the Freedom of Information Act, and that they should be applicable to this case. NCAP is eligible for fees under 552A4E, small 2I, 1 or 2, because NCAP received a judicial order in this case, finding that EPA violated FOIA, and the order did accord some relief. It required EPA to comply
with FOIA. Does it make any, I'm not sure why it matters whether the new statute applies. Even if it applies, does it make any difference?
I think it makes a little bit of difference, Your Honor, in that the Open Government Act was specifically intended to force EPA to comply on a timely basis, not just on a...
Well, the provision, is there a provision in, I guess it's E2, that you would point at as being helpful to you?
Well, the legislative history discusses the timeliness, and that's
but
what...
But nothing in the statutory language at all?
Not specifically, no.
I see.
But the second, I will say that the second part of that, the voluntary or unilateral change in the position of the agency, does change the position consistent with intervening case law.
Right, but there is no I'm sorry.
What was the voluntary
same question?
Change?
Well, you could argue a voluntary change.
What did the agency do that was voluntary?
Well, there really was nothing.
Right.
But there are peculiar circumstances here. You could argue that the agency voluntarily, if you will, adopted the disclosures made by Uniroyal in the 2002 summary judgment motion.
But it didn't voluntarily turn over the documents.
It actually never turned over the documents, and that's one of the primary issues here. The second issue is if Buchanan and its progeny still apply to this case, that NCAP is still entitled to fees because the district court already properly noted that the court's 2003 order changed the legal relationship of the parties and it did accord some relief. EPA failed to comply with FOIA for 6 years. And the public benefit was received because in the judge's order, he required EPA to provide an explanation for the redacted information, which provides illumination to the government processes.
How does that supplementary declaration differ from the Vaughn Index and CRT?
There's a difference between a Vaughn Index and a Vaughn Declaration. In this case, there was actually a Vaughn Index as well. It was a one-page document which was attached in the motion for summary judgment in 2002. Here, what the declaration does in this particular case is it, for the first time, gave NCAP and the public an explanation of the thought processes of the government.
But isn't that true of all Vaughn indexes?
No, because the index doesn't really go through in detail the level that the court ordered in this case to explain the redactions. And the difference in this case is that because EPA had never given us a document, essentially the Vaughn Declaration acted as EPA's first disclosure of the document.
Well, which provision of the FOIA did the court declare had been violated? When you say that there's a declaration of a violation here,
yes.
What was violated?
The failure to timely comply.
Well, that's not what the court said, right? The court said the failure was of explanation, right?
Yeah. Well, that was part of it. But
there was no order with respect to timeliness of filing or anything like of complying or anything like that.
There was because the court found that EPA never submitted the document to NCAP.
Okay, so I'm reading from the court's, I understood the way in which you would distinguish the CRT case.
Yes.
Is because you have a declaration of a violation in this case. Is that right?
Not only that, Your Honor, but also that the court ordered EPA to explain the redactions that Uniroyal made, not that EPA made.
Right, but that's the same as in CRT. The court ordered a Vaughn Index to explain the non-production. So that can't, am I wrong?
Well, the difference in this case.
Let's say that's all they did. Forget about the, leave outside the declaration. If all they did was order the agency to explain, isn't that exactly what happened in CRT?
It is, but the fact that, yes, but that misses the point that the government here never complied with FOIA. It never gave us a document. And so.
And isn't it the case that prior to the order, EPA had never reviewed the substantiation letter? Is that right?
They had reviewed it in part, but they had not reviewed it in full.
Yeah. Or they hadn't reviewed and given an explanation.
It was a very poor explanation.
Right.
And so the court said, give us a complete explanation, which essentially was the equivalent of the court ordering EPA to divulge the document in the first instance.
Well, it sounds then that you're relying on some provision of FOIA which requires an explanation for not producing a document, right? And that would be 6AI, which says notify the person making such requests of such determination and the reasons therefore.
Right. And what happened in this case is that EPA just simply did not respond.
That's not right. You cite the letter. They sent you a letter saying that the information is confidential.
Correct. But they never gave us the document that Uniroyal eventually gave us, which did have information in it.
Right. But the court didn't order them to give you that.
It had already been essentially given, so
right.
It seemed redundant or unnecessary.
Right.
But the court did find that EPA cannot use Uniroyal as a surrogate, and that was the language that the court used, to comply with FOIA. So we never got a document from EPA saying, okay, here is what is producible. You can redact certain parts of a document and provide part of it. EPA never even provided part of it, whereas Uniroyal provided 6 pages of a document with information of it with redactions. EPA never even did that.
But the court didn't hold that the failure to provide the document that Uniroyal provided was a violation. That's not what the court held. The court held that there wasn't an adequate explanation for why they were withholding the rest of it. The court remands this case to the EPA for an appropriate explanation of whether the agency has determined that all the information redacted from its substantiation letter is properly withheld under FOIA.
Correct.
Right? And so I'm having trouble understanding how that part is different than CRT.
Well, in this case, the remand order, and I'm quoting from JA-20, the remand order required defendant to undertake an action to explain the reasons for its withholdings and imposed a date certain for when that action must be completed. That order changed the relationship.
You're reading from the court's first opinion.
Yes.
Which it reversed.
Pardon me?
Which it reversed. You're reading from the court's first opinion, are you?
I am, but okay. It didn't reverse those findings. All it did was say that based on CRT, the district court holding in CRT, that there wasn't really any relief.
Right, but the only actual remand order is the one in the March 27, 2003 order, which says, cases remanded for an explanation of whether the agency has determined that all the information redacted by Uniroyal from its substantiation letter is properly withheld.
Yes.
That's what they did.
Yes.
Right. So let's take this into a slightly related situation. So if we hold, or if a district court holds that an agency's decision, not about FOIA, is arbitrary and capricious or inconsistent with the agency's statute because of its failure to explain well, and remands to the district to the agency for an explanation of why it reached the decision it did, is that substantial prevailing substantially?
In this particular case, it is because of the unique facts of this case that EPA had never provided a response to us.
Well, if an agency just comes out with a rule and doesn't explain the reasons for the rule, and the court says failure to explain, arbitrary and capricious, remand, explain to us the reasons for your rule, is that substantially prevailing?
Is that some relief? I believe it is under the circumstances of this case. In every case, I couldn't say, Your Honor.
Well, what I'm trying to do is square this with a string of our cases in which we said that's not.
Right.
Including one with a very similar name, National Coalition Against the Misuse of Pesticides. We repeatedly say that when what we do is remand to the agency for an explanation of why it's done what it's did. That is, the agency's explanation is not good enough to uphold its action, that that's not substantially prevailing. And I'm having difficulty understanding why that's different from what happened in this case. They told you that it was confidential. That's why they weren't producing it. The court says, well, that's not enough of an explanation. Need to know more. Remand. Give me more of an explanation.
Well, they did. The situation is they gave some explanation for only some of the redactions in the Uniroyal divulgence of the document. But they never provided a complete explanation. And so the explanation of the government's thought processes are information under the Freedom of Information Act that the public is entitled to as well.
I agree with that, but we have a case that we have to distinguish. There's a CRT, and that's what the court said in that case, exactly what you're saying. And yet, previous panels said that that's not substantially prevailing. That is, the explanation wasn't good enough.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that that part of the CRT holding is suspect given the recent Open Government Act amendments, which do away with Buchanan and its progeny.
Okay, so you think that CRT is wrongly decided in that respect?
In the first part of its opinion, where it affirmed the lower court, yes, based on the Open Government Act of 2007.
Okay, so then we go back to the question that Judge Tatel asked. So how does the Open Government Act change? Would that require us to, although you understand the panel can't reverse CRT, but I guess the full court could. In what way does the new statute change CRT?
Well, if you look at the legislative history of the act, it said that because the government agencies have been slow and obdurate in response to public information requests, as is the case here, that the court is essentially putting back the catalyst theory and also allowing for a cause of action that is a timely response to a document request. And that's replete through Senator Leahy's testimony, which is cited in our briefs in the legislative history. But that is a very important function of FOIA, is not only the provision of the information, but the timely provision of the information. Because if you don't provide it, you're essentially withholding the information.
And I asked you this question before, but now I'm not sure. Is there language that provided a cause of action for timeliness different than the previous language?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is John Truong, and I represent the appellee EPA in this case. We ask that the courts affirm the district court's reconsideration order, which held that appellants was not the prevailing party and therefore was not entitled to attorney's fees. I'll be very brief because I believe that the court's holding in CRT is dispositive here in this case. As with the order in the CRT, in which the district court ordered the FDA to supplement its Vaughan indices, and in CRT, the court held that such an order is not sufficient to confer a prevailing status on CRT, and therefore CRT was not entitled to attorney's fees. And that's the exact same situation what we have here,
But in CRT, we said that if a court orders an agency to do what the law requires, but the agency had not yet complied with the law, in that case you can get attorney's fees. Why doesn't that describe what took place here? EPA had not done yet what the law required until there was a court order that it do so. It had not yet given a complete explanation of the reason for withholding information from the document. I mean, you can dress it up as a, you know, Vaughan declaration or Vaughan index and try and get it under CRT, but when you step back from it, why doesn't this case fall squarely within what we said in CRT about an agency being forced to abide by FOIA.
Well, Your Honor, looking at the explanation in this case versus the inadequate Vaughan indices in the CRT case, there is no principal difference between what the EPA did not provide in terms of a robust explanation for its withholding of certain information.
Well, CRT hadn't, they had already conducted a review of documents. It was just EPA had already done what it was supposed to do. The agency had already done what it was supposed to do. The only issue was the adequacy of the Vaughan Index. Here, it's different. The EPA had not yet done what it was supposed to do, and that is review the documents and provide an explanation.
Well, it did review the documents, and it actually sent a letter to NCAP, the appellant here, saying that these documents are confidential, therefore we are not going to release in full. What it didn't do, and what the district court required, was that after unilaterally released the documents with redaction, and the EPA came back and said, well, to the district court, the case is not moot because Unireal has released the documents with redaction, and we believe the redacted portions is exempted from under exemption 4. But the district court said, no, your declaration never mentioned about the exemption 4 for the redacted portion, therefore I am ordering you now to provide an explanation why the redacted portion falls squarely under exemption 4. So in that sense, Your Honor, it is almost identical to the inadequate Vaughan indices that Judge Urbina ordered the FDA to redo in CRT. So there is no principal distinction between an inadequate Vaughan index or a declaration that did not contain the information that the district court was looking for.
Suppose the facts of this case were slightly different. Let's assume that Unireal did not give the plaintiffs the document, and that the agency refused to give it to them, so they sued under FOIA, and the court entered an order requiring the agency to review the document, produce a Vaughan index, and explain why, and do a segregability analysis, and to release by date certain any portion of the letter that wasn't protected. And then the agency, under that order, released this very letter. Would the plaintiff be entitled to fees?
In the scenario that Your Honor just described, yes. Because that would fall under Davey versus the CIA.
So the only difference here is that they happen to already have the letter, right? So why should that make a difference? In other words, why isn't the order, that the March order that the court entered here, essentially the same or tantamount to or comparable to the order in the case I described?
Oh,
it's exactly the same order. It just happened because of the odd circumstances of this case to come after the plaintiffs got the letter from Unireal, a third party.
Well, in fact, Your Honor, under FOIA case law, even assuming that a piece of information is available in the public, the agency still has an obligation to produce that information.
That's exactly right. Don't you think it's a little odd that the plaintiffs, they would obtain fees, as you agree, properly, it would be clearly entitled to fees under the hypothetical I suggested, yet they don't get it when the circumstances are virtually identical, except for the unusual circumstance of this case that they happen to have gotten the letter from Unireal. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, that unusual circumstance is it in this case, and there is not an order requiring the EPA to produce the documents.
The March order essentially was the same as the order in my hypothetical.
Well, not really, because
it said. You've got to explain which parts of this letter are protected and which parts aren't. You have to do a segregability analysis.
Right, but the order actually said that, the remand order from Judge Sullivan actually said that your declarations, the EPA's declaration before him at that time, did not contain the information,
right.
And so he ordered a more robust explanation.
Which is exactly what he would have done in my hypothetical.
Right, but this case actually falls squarely with the CRT in a sense, where Judge Abina required the FDA to provide a more robust description in its Vaughan indices. But the distinction here, Your Honor, is that there is no order requiring any production of documents. So that's the distinction. So it's not our fault that Uno Royale voluntarily produced the documents.
The result of the order was that the EPA was putting its stamp of approval on what Uniroyal had done, right? Isn't that worth something?
Well, we said, the argument that we made in front of the district court was that, well, now you have the documents, mate. What else do you want from the EPA now that you have the documents? So, but it was not our decision to release the documents. We didn't force Uniroyal.
Well, what else they want from the EPA, in addition to the documents, they want a statement from EPA as to that they've reviewed the document and what's the basis for withholding information. And they got that from the judge's order.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's exactly the same order that the CRT plaintiff have in the CRT case. The FDA produced an inadequate Vaughan index, and they said, well, to Judge Abina, I said, yeah, you know, Judge Abina, these Vaughan indices are inadequate, so order them to provide a more robust explanation in the Vaughan index, and Judge Abina ordered that, and eventually granted summary judgment in favor of the FDA after they supplemented the Vaughan index. So that's the same situation we have here, where the NCAP complained that our declaration was not robust enough to include the explanation for Exemption 4. Judge Sullivan ordered a more robust explanation. We did that, and then the Judge Sullivan eventually granted summary judgment in our favor. But more importantly, after we submitted the supplemental Vaughan index, NCAP never came back and complained about anything else. They accepted the explanation. They never complained to say that, well, you have to produce the documents also, above and beyond what we got from Uniroyal, because the FOIA requires you to do that. They never make that argument. If the court has no other questions, we respectfully request that the court affirms the district court's reconsideration order and dismiss this case. Thank you.
I think you're out of time, but you can take 1 minute.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what's your reaction to what counsel just
said? Wait, I'm sorry. You should sit down, and the other counsel should sit down. That's all right.
Thank you, Your Honors. I did attempt to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You can have one. And
all right,
thank you. A bit of it with a question. What's your reaction to the last comment from government counsel here, which is that, you know, what you should have done is ask for an order forcing EPA to produce the actual documents? Then you'd be entitled to fees.
That seemed
Unnecessary.
Right? I mean, it's a redundancy. I mean, that would have been a technical redundancy, because EPA essentially adopted Uniroyal's disclosure as its own. But it didn't explain the redactions, and that's the critical issue here.
Won't that always happen? In any case in which a court orders the Vaughan Index, doesn't that have to mean the court believes that there is insufficient explanation for withholding?
Well, this is a little bit different than the typical Vaughan Index.
Let me first start with this question.
Sure.
Isn't it true that the court cannot order a Vaughan Index unless the court can't figure it out without one? That's the point of the Vaughan Index.
Yes.
Give us an explanation.
Yes, to give an explanation, yes.
So, and that means that whatever explanation the agency has already provided to the requester is not sufficient.
Yes.
So that means in every Vaughan Index you get attorney's fees.
I would argue that under the Open Government Act of 2007 amendments that's the case.
I understand that. But before that.
Yes.
That's inconsistent with CRT. So
yes.
So you are leading us on a path that requires us to do what I just interjected for a moment.
Yes.
Is to hold that the Open Government Act reverses CRT, effectively reverses CRT.
That would be correct, yes.
Okay. I'm troubled by the lack of any language which would allow us to do this. The statute provides three kinds of causes of action. It provides a cause of action to order, enjoin the agency from withholding agency orders. and to order the production of any agency records, and it also added a specific cause of action for expedition.
Yes.
Which we discussed in Edmonds. But it doesn't have any other cause of action in it.
Well, it, actually, the new one does, and I made a mistake when you asked me that question earlier. 6A does have timeliness provisions that were added once again to reemphasize what Congress intended in the first place. And that's the important point of the legislative history. It says we're not really doing anything new. We're just reemphasizing what we intended in the first place. And here, in this case, as the government conceded at page 26 of its briefs, they said the action should be ruled by the law at the time of the action, which is 1999, when the catalyst theory was in place. And here again, now the catalyst theory is back in place.
Which section of 6A is the one you're pointing to?
In the general section, there are a number of new amendments to that section.
The determine within 20 days section? Is that what you mean?
Yes, not that the 20-day period shall commence, and it gives specific requirements for timeliness responses.
But there was a 20-day requirement before, wasn't there?
Yes, and this gives even more specificity to what that intends, as does the legislative history.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
Submitted. Thank you.